We're going to start Perek Zayin Pasuk Yud Ches. What we're really going to do over here is we're going to talk about the Nesim and what was happening with the Nesim themselves, and then go on with the other things over there. So, for example, it starts off, Beyom HaShini, Yikriv Nisan Ben Tzur, Nesi Yisachar. On the second day, Nisan Ben Tzur, the Nasi of Yisachar, brought his korban. He kriv es korbano. And it adds on that he brought his korban karas kesef achas. Now, there's four questionable things that happen over here. So, the four questionable things are, number one, by each other shevet, we see that the word Nasi comes before the name of the Nasi itself. Okay, so we each one of them, it says, Nasi Nisan Ben Tzur. But here, it says, Nisan Ben Tzur, Nasi. Number two, it says the word nisi with a shva instead of nasi with a komatz. So the question is, why does it word it in a weird way? That's number two. Number three, it says hikriv twice. By every other korban, by every other nasi, it says the word hikriv once, and that's that. But here it says the word hikriv twice. Number four, it says over here, hikriv is korbano, it says hikriv without a yud. In the second pasuk, in pasuk yutes, it says it without a yud itself. So we're going to ask, why is this over here? Now, very quickly, all 12 Nisim that brought Korbanos, we're not including Shevet Levi, obviously, we're including Ephraim and Manasseh as two different Shvatim. Every single one of them that brought a Korban, the wording is almost exactly the same. The first one was Nachshon ben Aminadav, ben Mata Yehuda. That was Nachshon ben Aminadav himself. That was a little bit different, but that makes sense because you're starting it off. You want to say it in a certain way. Nisano ben Tzur is a little bit weird because, again, it says Nisi after Nisano ben Tzur and then Hikriv is Korbano, but all the others are exactly the same, where it just says Nasi. It mentions their name, and then Korbano, Karas Kesev Achas Shloshim Mumeyam Mishkala Mizrachal Kesev Shem Mishak Veshach HaKodesh, and it goes on from there. So the Tzedek L'Derech points out in the first place, it says, why does the Torah spend so much time repeating all the Pesukim over and over and over again, which makes no sense. You shouldn't have this repetition of the Pesukim. It's a waste of Pesukim. And we're talking over 70 Pesukim that happen over here, and it's all the same things over and over and over again. What's the pshat? The answer is, he says, because Hashem wanted to give honor to those who feared him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give pure honor to the people that were showing him fear to show everyone is equal in his eyes. There's no difference to me between the Nasi of Yehuda and the Nasi of Yisachar and the Nasi of Zvulun and the Nasi of Reuven and the Nasi of Shimon, etc. Everybody is the same thing. That's the main idea, that everybody gets their own parsha, everybody gets their own bunch of psukim, even though it's the exact same thing. And there's a second answer he gives. The second answer is the famous one. Everyone had their own kavanos when they were bringing these korbanos. They might have brought the exact same thing, but their intentions behind the korban were completely different. Everyone had something that was shayach to their shevet. For example, Yisachar was into learning. Zvulun was into parnasa. So Yisachar had in mind when he brought each korban, each single thing that he brought, he thought to himself, here's what this means. Karas kesev achaz is to go through the entire world, etc. Zvulun had the same thing himself, but he thought of his own kavanos that went through. Every person wanted something different. So even though the physical objects they brought were the same, the spiritual counterpart was completely different. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to point that out by mentioning each one of them all the way through. The Chiddush HaRim says this is why Rashi explains the details by the second set of korbanos, not by Yehuda. Because by Nachshon ben Aminadav, there's no raya. Maybe he brought korbanos and that's that. When Yisachar brought the second pair of korbanos, and they were all the same thing that Yehuda did, says Rashi, the reason why he did that is not to copy Yehuda. It's because he had his own set of kavanos. And here, Rashi goes through what those kavanos were. He didn't just copy. He had his own ideas, his own kavanos. This is what he did over here. The Chassam Sofer and Torah's Moshe talks about this as well. And the Mea Shiloach says, listen, this is a Hasidic Shavuot. So you got to either accept that as a Chassid or just sort of, you know, roll over it and just say, like, I guess I don't understand it. Mea Shiloach says, if you look at the words, even though they're the exact same thing, you can see their reasons when reading the words themselves. That takes a Hasidish mind to be able to go through, but you can see the kavanas of each one when you look inside there. The Chavetz Chaim says, this is a huge lesson. It's a lesson of what happens when Hashem sees the people love each other and are humbling each other for their friends. You see, the concept is like this. When the Nesiim acted haughtily, and they said, let B'nai Yisrael bring whatever they're going to bring, and we'll finish it up at the end. We'll bring for whatever they need, whatever they didn't bring to the Mishkan, we'll take care of. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only didn't explain what they brought. They brought Avnei Miluim and Avnei Shoham. Those are unbelievably precious stones. And just think, you have a ruby that's that big. That's more than almost all of the silver that anybody would have brought to the base to the Mishkan. It's more than any single donation, just one ruby. When the Nesiim brought that one ruby, one emerald, one crystal, everything that they brought, it was expensive stuff. Yet the Torah just They brought Avni Shoham and Avni Miluim. And not only that, it writes the Nesiim, and it's missing the Yuds. It takes out, says the Chafetz Chaim, when you act with gaiva, when you act with an ego, as if I'll take care of all the rest, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away from your gift. When you act magnanimously, when you act with a nivus, and you give in to everybody else, and you say, let's all do it together. Let's bring this together, that everybody will bring the same exact thing. At that point, everything is brought, and not only is everything brought, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mentions every single pasuk, everything that they brought, and puts it all the way out there. When the Nesiim act like this, it's like that. When the Nesiim act like giving over to other people, then it's like that. That's the concept, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's mentioned over here. Now, he says the most amazing thing. You know, the Nesiim all died. Every single one of them were involved in either Adas Korach, or the Misloninim, or the Hisavu Taiva, the Safsuf HaShir V'Kabam that were Hisavu Taiva. They all died in next week's Parshan Baloscha, and if not that, by Korach, every single one of the Nesiim died. And here's the pshat, it's absolutely amazing. They all died. Every single one of them passed away, and yet the Torah goes through every one of their korbanos as if they're all chashuv, as if they're all the greatest people in the world. He says that's the most amazing thing, says the Tehillah Derech, that we're forgetting about what it's going to be. Here, right now, they're all tzaddikim. We know about Bashir Husham by Yishmael, that we look at him as he is right now. We don't care about what's going to be in the future. It's the exact same thing by the Nesiim. We look at them right now as opposed to what's going to be in the future. Now, Rashi says, the reason why Hikriv appears over here is because somebody complained. Reuven got up and said, I understand why Yehuda went first. Yehuda went first because of Nachshon Ben Ami Nadav. Nachshon Ben Ami Nadav was a tremendous tzaddik, jumped into Kriyas Yamsuf, made the sea split. Nachshon Ben Ami Nadav deserves to go first, said Reuven. I get that. But I want to be second. I'm the oldest, said Reuven. I should be the one who goes second. It was Elitzur Ben Shteyor who was going to be by him. I should be in front of everybody else. Why is Yisachar put there? Why is Yisachar second instead of me? Moshe informed him, this is how Rashi puts it, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu had decided it was going to be brought according to the Masos HaDegalim, according to how the Degalim were going to go. That it was going to be Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvuin, and then Reuven, Shimon, Gad, then Ephraim, Menashe, Binyamin, and finally, Dan, Asher, Naphtali. And that's how it was going to go. According to the way that the Degalim went, that's how everybody was going to go. Therefore, Reuven was going to have to be fourth instead of second. That was the idea that he told them. And therefore, the word hakriv, it should be hikriv, but it's spelled without a yud, to be the word hakrev. Hakrev means as a tzivoy. It's mitzave, telling you, you should bring it. Yisachar didn't want to do it. Yisachar said, I don't want to be second. Reuven wants to be second. Let Reuven go first. Yisachar didn't want to step ahead. Nisan ben Tzur was like, no, I have no problem with it. Let Reuven go in front of me. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to say to him, hakrev, you bring it. So he Krivis Korbano is written without the Yud to show that he was told he had to bring it, even though he didn't want to. He wanted Reuven to go in front of him. He was commanded to do so over here. The Das Zakenim says he wasn't supposed to be there. He was brought close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ravina Bechai explains how the Yud is missing in that. It's a little bit strange in how he was brought close. Whatever. It doesn't make a difference regarding that. The Elis HaShachar says very simply, we don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do it this way. We have no idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided it's going to be Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, then Reuven, but we have absolutely no idea. There was no svara given to Klal Yisrael. There was no command given over to Klal Yisrael. Nobody said anything. It just was known, this is what you're going to do, and that's what they went ahead and did. They did it exactly as it was. Now Rashi goes on. Another reason why the word Hikriv is added on, and the reason why it's mentioned twice over here, is because there were two other reasons why this Shevet should go first. Here's another one. Yisachar is known as Yodei Bina, and we know that. They're the smartest among everybody. They're the ones who are Yodei Bina. They were able to be Ma'aber, the Chadashim. They knew how all the things worked up in the heavens themselves. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, this pasuk teaches us that Talmidei Chachamim come first. Talmidei Chachamim get to go before everybody else because they're Talmidei Chachamim. Yisachar going second. We understand the Melech, Nachshon Ben Yehudah, and Shevet Yehuda, they go first. We get that. The king always goes first. You can't be mochel on the covet of a king. But a Talmid Chacham always comes second. And that's Yisachar. It should have been Reuven, but Yisachar comes second. Now, you get something even better. Zvulun goes third before Reuven. You think that Reuven would accept Yisachar? He's the Talmud Chacham. Let the Talmud Chacham go first. But Zvulun is the one that's paying for the Talmud Chacham. That's all he's doing. Why should he go first? Comes the Pasuk, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, and says that Zvulun paying for Yisachar makes him come right after Yisachar, which is amazing. You wouldn't have thought this way. This is something that's totally against what you would have thought. Nonetheless, Zvulun comes second. It's a big problem by me. I'm just going to ask you as a question. Why in the world, Yisachar and Zvulun, does it go that manner? Can you imagine? Hold on a second. When did Zvulun pay for Yisachar in the Midbar? When did that happen? Does that make any sense to you at all? I get Yisachar. I get it. He may have learned more than everybody else. In some way, shape, or form, maybe he stayed in the base measures a little bit more often. It's a kasha that I have because everybody should have learned equally, but I get that Yisachar might have been a little more often. But Zvulun? That Zvulun started paying for Yisachar when they're in the Midbar, and therefore you went third after Yisachar, after Yehuda, he goes before Reuven? What does that mean? Maybe it's for the future. It's strange. But the Malbim seems to say that he has an answer for this. Seems to say they didn't learn as much, but they had great advice. Yisachar's Mila was not that he was a Talmud Chacham alone. It's that he gave great advice. You know, when I started becoming a Rebbe in Yeshiva, I went to Rabbi First here in Chicago, and I asked him, I said, how can I give good advice? What can I do to have this good advice? What could I do for it? And he told me that he learned from his Rebbe, from Moshe Feinstein. He said he had learned that you should always concentrate in Mariv during Hashkivenu, in the words, Zakinenu be'etza tova milfanecha. You should be metaking us with good etza from before you. That if a person wants to give good advice to people and wants to be an advisor to what other people do, have kavana during those words, v'sakenenu be'etza tova milfanecha, and everything becomes better. That's how you build yourself up. By saying those words, that's what comes out of here. Says the Malbim, that's what Yisachar did. Yisachar's Milo was not just that they learned more than anybody else, because we don't see that they learned more than anybody else in the Midbar. It's that they were able to give good etza, and they gave great etza. What was the etza that he gave? Here's the other answer. Rashi continues and says, they gave good advice to the Shvatim over here by saying the following. He said, guys, I know everybody wants to bring their own set of korbanos. Yehuda just brought his. Nachshon and Nadav brought his set of korbanos. I think everyone here should bring their own set of korbanos that are exactly the same as what Yehuda did. I don't want any jealousy, said Nisano Ben Tzur and Shevet Yisachar. They said, I don't want anybody to think everybody should bring their own. You can have their own korbanos. The intentions behind it should be the same. But Nisano Ben Tzur suggested it, and everyone accepted it. They said, you know what? That's a great idea. Instead of everyone bringing their own and trying to one-up their friend, every single person one-upping what the other guy did, no. Everybody's going to do it together. I'll give an example. We know that Cain killed Hevel. What happened? Cain brought a korban of all of his bad fruits and brought it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it wasn't accepted. Hevel brought the sheep, the fattened sheep, and brought it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it was accepted. Right? And then afterward, what happened? Cain killed Hevel. So let me ask you, why did Hevel deserve to die? What did Hevel do to deserve to die? What did he do wrong? In order to die, I know there's a concept, and Reb Dessler talks about it, about Bechira, that you could kill anyone, even if he's a great tzaddik, you can make a decision and go through. But nonetheless, why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow for a miracle to happen that Hevel was saved? Hevel, after all, brought the first korban, aside from Adam's, that was accepted by another human being. So I don't understand, why wouldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow it? What's that? Yeah, the second. Right, the second, because Adam Rishon technically was the first one to be brought. Yeah, granted, 100%. But in actual, there was something that happened that went through. Why wouldn't Hevel have been saved? Why couldn't Hevel be saved? It's a great question, right? The Kliyakar answers, because Hevel only did it to one-up his brother. Cain brought a korban that was bad, and it wasn't accepted. So Hevel said, I'm going to get mine accepted. He didn't do it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't do it for the right reasons. He did it because, like a younger brother does, the younger brother wants to one-up his older bro, so he goes ahead and he brings something that's a little bit better. Hevel did that, he doesn't get to live. If Cain wants to kill him, I'm not going to allow a miracle to happen through him. That's what ended up happening. And here's what Nisano Ben Tzur saw. Nisano Ben Tzur looked at everybody else and said, guys, we're not trying to one-up each other. I don't want Yehuda to bring one thing, and then everybody else try to one-up and say, I'm going to do this now, I'm going to bring that now. I don't want that to happen. Everyone's going to bring the exact same thing. He gave that opinion, and it all worked out well.
So why was the korban accepted?
Why was Hevel's korban accepted? It was a good korban. It was brought right properly. Yeah, it was brought in the right way, and it all happened in the proper way. The kavana behind it was not the best kavana. That's not l'shem shemayim, and therefore he could be killed. Doesn't mean that he's chayav misa, but he could be killed for it if Cain wants to kill him. Reb Moshe Darshan says Nisano Ben Tzur himself gave this advice. It wasn't Shevet Yisachar as a whole. It was Nisano Ben Tzur himself. And the Be'er Basada says that's why it says he creaved with a chirik. He's the one that caused the others to do it. He creaved. He caused them to be makriv korbanos. It was all through him. Balaturim brings a gematria that says this. Bayom hasheni he creaved is 740. Same thing as nosan lohem eitza. He gave them this advice. And notice, nosan, not nosnu, not they brought it. He gave the advice. He's the one that did it over here. But the shach says that was not the advice. The advice was not what to bring. That was not the advice. It was a havami. The advice was really something else, that they should bring something in the first place. He pointed out to them, guys, we lost an opportunity. Nobody wanted to bring korbanos over there. Nisim wasn't even thinking to bring korbanos. He said, we lost an opportunity. By the time when everybody was bringing something for the Mishkan itself, we said, no, we'll wait until the very end. And we waited until the very end and it was bad. Let's not do it this time. Let's bring something first. We'll be the first people to bring korbanos of our tribes. All of our shvatim will be represented by us. That's what he gave as advice. He told everyone, let's bring korbanos. And everyone agreed. Shevi Yehuda with Nachshon ben Nadav agreed. Shevi Zvulun together with their Eliyav ben Chelon, they agreed. Reuven with Elitzur ben Shtur, Shlumiel ben Suri Shdayav Shimon, they all agreed. They said, you're right, let's do it this time. Let's be first this time. That was the advice that he gave, and they all accepted it. That's the idea behind it. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to accept it. Moshe Rabbeinu looked at what they did. The Shach says, Moshe Rabbeinu looked at their korbanos and said, you guys didn't bring before, I'm not accepting your korban now. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to accept the korban. That's what he said. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them they were being makriv themselves with their korbanos. This is not just sama korban. They're literally sacrificing themselves to bring this korbanos. Let it be. Allow them to go through. And that's why it says the word hikriv twice. He suggested for them to be makriv, and then they actually brought themselves. They brought as much as they could to be able to go through. That was the advice that he gave, and that was what was accepted over here. Divrei Meir says he gave them advice not only what to bring and how to bring it, but also each shevet, how they should bring it, and what the kavanos should be. He looked over at Shevi Yehuda and said, here's what you're bringing, and here's why you're bringing it, to strengthen the malchus of Klal Yisrael. Shevet Zvulun, here's why you're bringing these korbanos, and here's why you're doing it, to build up your parnasa. Shevet Reuven, you're the Baal Tshuva. You're doing this in order to build up tshuva, and here's why you're bringing it. Yisachar not only told them what to bring, not only told them that they should bring, he gave them why, the reasons behind each one of their korbanos and what they brought and why they did it. That's the Divrei Meir over here, an amazing Divrei Meir. Pardes Yosef brings a Yalkut Shimoni. This is in Chelek Aleph Remez Tav Shin Tesvav in 715. It says, Nisano Ben Tzur is not only the advisor now, he was the one that told Nachshon Ben Aminadav to jump into the Yamsuf. When Nachshon Ben Aminadav, everybody's standing out there and they're waiting and they don't know what to do. And they turn to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, we got to go. We've got to just travel. Everybody stood at the Yamsuf and they said, what should we do? Nisano Ben Tzur of Shevet Yisachar turned to Nachshon Ben Aminadav of Shevet Yehuda and said, you're the Nasi of the Malchus Shevet. You're the Nasi of the Shevet that has Malchus. You go in first. Nisano Ben Tzur would have gone in himself first. But he said, I can't go in. I'm not the Melech. The Melech should go in first. Nachshon, you go in first. He gave that suggestion. Nachshon did it. And that's why they went through Yamsuf. All because of Nisano Ben Tzur. That's why he gets to go second. Again, Lishitaso. He doesn't want to be first. He's not the king. But he's going to be second right after the king. That's the concept of what he was going to do. He actually gave that out, advice. The Ksav Sofer, the Tamidas, and Tamid Akra say the most obvious thing. They say, since he gave them all advice and told the other Shvatim what to do, it was like he was being makriv every single day. Every day was his own korban over and over and over again. He brought Yehuda's korban. He brought his own korban, Zvulun's korban, Reuven's korban. He did everything because he gave the advice. When you tell somebody to give tzedakah, it's like you're giving that tzedakah. What happened on the second day? He kriv his korbano. He brought his own korban. Every other day was also makriv with each one of them. But on day two, it was he kriv his korbano. He brought his own korban, and that's what they have. That's the idea behind it. Says the Igret Akala that's hinted to by the lack of a yud. The missing yud. Yud hints to chachma. He gave his chachma over to others. He told them what to do in some way, shape, or form. He told them how to get it right. He's the one that gave the advice to others. That's how it's hinted to in the word hikriv itself. So again, five things that he gave advice on. He gave advice that everybody should do the exact same thing so there's no jealousy. That's the first thing. Number two, he told them, not only this, but he told them, this is what we should do to make a kapara for us not doing it in the first place, meaning the how to do it. Number three, the whys. He told each one of them why they should do it. Number four, he told Nachshon ben Aminadav to jump inside the Yam Suf itself. Number five, he was makriv together with everybody else. Hikrivis korbano only happened on day two. The only time he brought his actual korban was on day two itself. That's what we have over here. Now the Orach Chaim goes in and he explains the double lashon in a different fashion. He says he wasn't just bringing a korban here. He had in mind the korban above as well. Meaning every time you bring a korban down here, there's a special korban of yourself in Shemayim, where the Gemara says that Michoel is taking the nefesh of the tzaddikim and sacrificing it and the korban up above, as if Michoel is the Kohen Gadol corresponding to the Kohen down below. And everything that's happening down here is happening up in Shemayim as well. And that Nisano ben Tzur had not only in mind down here, he had kavanos and ideas when he's bringing this korban that something should happen in Shemayim as well. The truth is, we should have that in our tefillah. Doesn't always happen that way, but our tefillah should be filled with those thoughts that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do. He brought it flawlessly. Nothing wrong. He had done everything perfectly as if this was what was supposed to happen. And that's the concept. No one else was able to do this. He was able to be Hikruvis Korbano. He was able to do everything he was supposed to do. No one else was able to do it the same way that he was going to be able to do it. That's the concept behind it. It could be, the Chassam Sofer says, he was the only one that had thoughts lishma. Think about this. Reuven had in mind to be a Baal Tshuva with his korbanos. Yehuda, to strengthen his malchus. Zvulun, what did Zvulun do? For Parnassah. Everybody had their own svaras as to why they wanted to bring these korbanos. The only one who had Torah in mind was Yisachar. And it wasn't for his own sake. It's that I become a Talmud Chacham, said Yisachar. It was for everyone's sake. That everybody becomes a greater Talmid Chacham. That's what he was thinking over here. That makes a difference, says the Chassam Sofer. He was the only one that was truly Lishma. The only one that did it, L'shem Shemayim itself. Let's go on. The Moshe of Zakenim says an interesting answer. It says, Nisano was the wealthiest of all the Nasiim. That every Nasi was rich. But Nisano ben Tzur was the wealthiest out of all of them. I assume that means that he brought more money out of Mitzrayim. Because if you look in the Pasuk, by Yaakov's bracha, it says, Yisachar chamor garim. It says, Atzur benichsin. He was rich with property. They all had more stuff than everybody else had. There was nobody like them. So he actually donated more things than everybody else donated. Everybody donated something. Everybody had something to donate. Yisachar donated more. So think about this for a second. We just said that Yisachar told everybody should do something equally. Everybody should do that. But behind the scenes, Yisachar was donating more than everybody else. He didn't want anybody to know about it. And nobody does know about it. We look in the Pesuk and we don't see anything different about Yisachar. But that's why it says he creeped twice. He brought the regular korbanos, just like everybody else. And then he brought more. He bought wagons. He bought other things that no one else was involved with. That's what he did. That was so much more than everybody else. He was wealthier than everybody else. He was able to bring everybody else. But Rav Wolfson in Emunas Yitech on page 119 gives another reason that seems to be the exact opposite. He said Yisachar had no property of his own. He didn't own anything. Zvulun owned everything. Zvulun gave him all of his money. So you might think that he's not able to bring his own stuff because it's Zvulun's stuff. Zvulun's giving him money. So Zvulun's the one that gave him everything he's supposed to be. It's not like that. Yisachar's money is considered his in the hands of Zvulun. So here's the idea. When a person gives money to an ani, so you think to yourself, I'm giving my hard-earned dollar to the poor person that's at the door. But it's not so. That money was always the poor person's money. That money was given to you to eventually give to that poor person. It was never yours to begin with. You thought it was yours, but it wasn't. It was always meant to be given over to somebody else. That's the concept by all of tzedakah. Hikriv es korbano means Yisachar understood and he realized he brought his korban. It's my money, even if Zvulun is the one that is giving me the money for me to do this. That's the way that it should be. That's the way that we understand it. It's a tremendous lesson in how to give tzedakah. That it's not about me losing something. It's about the other guy taking back what's actually his. That's the idea behind it. There's a Pardes Yosef over here as well, but we don't have to go into the Pardes Yosef. Our final idea that we want to go through is the word Nasi. Again, we said that by every other Shevet, the last 10 Shvatim, it says the word Nasi. By Yisachar, it says the word Nisi, right? And it says it after his name. And Yehuda, it doesn't say the word Nasi at all. Nachshon Aminadav, it does not say the word Nasi at all. The question is, why? Why is it different by Yisachar and Yehuda than it is by everybody else? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says they were both great men who were well known. They didn't need the title Nasi to be known as great. Shlumia ben Tzuri Shadoi needed the title Nasi. Elitzur ben Shdeor needed the title Nasi. But Nachshon ben Yonadav and Nisano ben Tzur were so great on their own, they were known to be Nesiim without anything else. This is the idea behind it. Nisano's name, his name refers to his greatness in Torah. He was involved in the Matana of Hashem, Nosan El, and he pained himself to go learn Torah. He was Tzur as in Tsar. He went further and further, and maybe that's why he was Zocha to be the leader of a Shevet filled with Talmidei Chachamim. What made one Talmid Chacham greater than the other? This Talmid Chacham, Nisano ben Tzur, put himself out there to learn Torah greater than everybody else, harder than everybody else. He worked harder. He became a better person because of what he did. He worked so hard to do it. That made Nisano ben Tzur greater than everybody else. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that's why you don't need the word Nasi like everybody else does. Just Nasi Yisachar. The pshat is that he was well known as being the greatest man alive, the greatest man that was there. Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein was once asked a shaila by a doctor. I don't know if it was a doctor or a nurse or something like that, but a person came up to him and said the following. There was a great gon that was in the hospital. Now, for his refuah, in order to be healed, he needed to eat a gel cap medicine. The problem with the gel cap medicine is obviously there's gelatin involved. There's shailas about gelatin. Are you allowed to have gelatin? Are you allowed to have that? I'm not going to answer any shailas today, whether or not this is mutter or not. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein felt that it was important for him to eat the gel cap, the gelatin that was in this thing itself. But he said, I want to tell you a story. And it's always good when you have a story within a story. Yitzchak Zilberstein said that there's something that happened with Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer was the father-in-law of Rav Aaron Cutler in Lakewood, right? Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer was in Europe and came to Eretz Yisrael. What happened was, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer lived to a very old age. He fell, and he had to be taken to the hospital. So when he was bringing to the hospital, he had like this hard, whatever it was, but it was a problem. It was 1948. And in 1948, the hospitals were filled with soldiers, and there wasn't much that they could do. The doctor saw there was something wrong, right? And the reason why he had fallen was not because, well, whatever, he had a deficiency of some sort. I would assume it's a calcium deficiency. So he told him, here's what you got to do. You got to drink milk. You got to go drink milk. And that way, you're going to be okay. The problem, 1948, in Yerushalayim, there was no milk anywhere to be found. Nobody had milk. You just weren't going to find it. It was impossible to find. So the Talmidim went everywhere. They searched all over the place. Eventually, they were able to find 1 liter of milk. That's what they were able to find. 1 liter of milk, and that was it. They brought it to Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. They served it to him. They brought it in a little cup, and they heated it up. And they brought it over to him, and he drank it. He felt a little bit better. But he needed to have that milk. He needed to have more. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer was makbid gomer. He cared so much about mayim gluyim. He would not drink anything that was left open at any point. Meaning you always had to cover up the drinks no matter what. If it was open, mayim gluyim. And even though most people say, like, what's the big deal? You're worried about snake poison that might be in the drink? Who worries about that? There's no snake poison in these drinks anymore. Nonetheless, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer held like the grub, the Vilna Gaon. You're makbid gomer on not having mayim gluyim. So the problem was that after they served him the milk, and remember, this is extremely expensive milk, and there was no other way to get it, no other way that they were going to find milk in Yerushalayim at this time. They left it open, and they totally forgot about it. It happens. The person who was in charge just forgot about it. So now they had a real shiloh. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer needs the rest of the milk, but it was mayim gluyim. It was cholov gluyim. It was open. He can't drink it. He held his own shita was that you couldn't drink it, but he needs it. It's a revuah. So what do you do? So they went next door. It doesn't say who they asked, but they went to a great gaon, and they asked him, what should we do? Should we feed him the milk and not tell him about the chol of gluyim? Or should we tell him it's chol of gluyim and he won't drink the milk? What should we do? So what did the gaon say? The gaon said, don't tell him. Take care of the milk. Give it to him. Don't say a thing. It'll be okay. So if this is on the altar, okay, so he was going to drink the milk. So what do? They took the milk and they boiled it on top of the oven. As he was boiling it on top of the oven, somebody knocked on the door of the house. So the guy who was boiling the milk went to the front door, took care of whatever needed to be taken care of. When he comes back into the kitchen, the milk had entirely evaporated. The fire had been just a bit too high. So instead of it boiling and just becoming regular milk, it had boiled out completely. There was nothing left. They couldn't serve any milk. They had no milk left. So he went to Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer and they told him the story. And they said, you'll never believe what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for you. We know you're Makvin Amayim Gluyim. We had to ask a Shaila. And this is what happened. You're not going to be able to have the milk. There's nothing we can do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of the issue for you. A nes gului, they told them. A nes gului for you that you didn't have to drink something that you weren't going to drink otherwise. See what Rav Yisrael Meltzer did? He started crying. You know what he cried about? He sat there and he said to himself, this is what I deserve? I get this? That means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machshiv me much more than I ever thought I was. I thought I was a good person. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu does nisim for me? That means I'm greater. I am greater than I thought I was. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has higher expectations of me. So he said, I can't believe that just happened. He started crying. That he was so great and he doesn't think he's as great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to blame him for what he didn't do. So Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein said, you can serve this gon the gel caps. If it works and you feed him the gel caps, meaning if you end up giving it to him, then you'll know he wasn't, that was what was supposed to happen. And if he's a great, great gon like Rav Yitzchak Zalman Melter, then the gel caps will never be able to be given to him. If he's really so makbid about not eating them, then he'll never get them in the first place. Something will happen, and there's no way he's going to get the gel caps. But it's an unbelievable lesson to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has responsibilities that we have to take care of. Sometimes we're up to that responsibility. Sometimes we have a higher responsibility than we thought possible. We're greater than we actually thought we were. People are greater than they actually thought they were. It's an unbelievable line. The Chidah says, both Nisan ben Tzur and Nachshon ben Yonadav were great enough. They were humble people. They didn't want the title Nasi by their name. Nachshon was well known on his own, so Hashem didn't put it in at all. Nisan ben Tzur was not as much, so it appeared in a strange way. But they were both unbelievably humble people. They didn't want the word Nasi to appear by their name whatsoever. Yisachar made him the Nasi because he was the greatest Talmud Chacham out there, but that's that. The Shach says, really, he was such a huge Talmud Chacham, he should have been first. But we said, Malchus took place. And that's the reason why. That's how great of a Talmud Chacham he was supposed to be over here. That's how the Shach puts it over here. Now that's the concept. That's what we have. I'm going to end with a story. Above, we mentioned that Nisan gave advice to everyone, and everyone accepted it. Everybody took the advice and said, that's amazing advice. We know many times over that one bit of good advice or a chesed is a schus that lasts for many, many years. It's a tremendous list. This is a great story. It's brought by Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein again in Alein El Shabach. One time, there was a soldier who was working in Hebron, right? He was working in Hebron. And as he was there, a sharpshooter, shot him while he was doing one of his rounds. He got hit and he was down. There was nothing he was going to be able to do. He did not have a partner. His radio was too far away. He couldn't reach it. He was hit so hard, right? He wasn't going to be able to reach his radio whatsoever. So he had nothing to do. The soldier was going to die. He was going to bleed out, and that was going to be it. Another soldier happened to be walking by right at that moment, saw that the soldier was down, ran in to be able to help this soldier, pulled him out from all the other places, saw what was going on, staunched the wound, immediately called for an ambulance. The ambulance came. They brought him inside. They brought him over to the hospital. This soldier went with the hit soldier, the wounded soldier, right? The savior soldier went with the wounded soldier to the hospital. He didn't want him to die as he was on the way. And he kept telling him, come on, you can do this. Come on, you can do this. And he kept holding on the wound, making sure the blood didn't come out. He got to the hospital. They rushed him into immediate surgery. They took care of him, and Baruch Hashem, he was able to live. When the parents of that wounded soldier came, the soldier that was with him the whole time realized, okay, he's got his family here, I can go. Never said who he was, didn't say anything, right? He just got up and he left, and that was that. So the wounded soldier's parents got the whole story from their son, realized that there was a soldier who had saved their son, and wanted to know so badly, who was the person that did that? Who's the person that saved our son? Who's the person that was able to do that? So they went out and they tried finding out, who was the guy that saved it? They couldn't find out. There was no way to figure it out. Because the guy wasn't supposed to be there. I don't know what the whole deal was, but they couldn't figure out the soldier. So they eventually, as their son got healed and everything was all good and he went back to his normal life, these parents of the wounded soldier, they had a makolet in a certain place. They had a makolet in Kiryat Malachi. And the outside of Kiryat Malachi, outside their makolet, they put a whole sign. They showed a picture of their son. And they told over the whole story as a thanks, a zecher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving their son. And it said, if anybody has any information who this soldier is that saved our son, please tell us. That's why they put a huge sign outside of their makolet itself. So a year and a half passed. A year and a half went by. And eventually somebody came in, right, into the store. She had been visiting from another place. She walks in the store, buys something. As she goes out, she sees the sign. She runs back in. She says, that was my son. My son saved your son. That was my son that ended up saving your son. She told over the whole story from the other perspective. This soldier shouldn't have been there, but he saw the guy, grabbed him into the ambulance, went with him to the hospital, right? Ended up leaving in time. That's my son that ended up going there. She calls up her son. She says, you have to come to Kiryat Malachi. You have to come to Kiryat Malachi. She told her son, come right now. So everybody's standing there. They're all wowed. There are people that went into the makolet. Everybody's hearing this story together. They're like, this is the craziest thing. So amazing. Your son is an amazing person, etc. She calls over the mother of the savior soldier, calls over the mother of the wounded soldier. She says, I need to speak to you. Can we speak privately? She said, 100%. So she calls over to the side and she says, I just want you to know that this is not the first time we're meeting. We met 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I came into your makolet. I was a very different person. I was pregnant. I was having a horrible pregnancy. It was not easy for me. Nothing in life was easy for me. Things were really, really bad. And I broke down crying in your makolet. As I was buying things, I broke down crying. And you asked me why I was crying. And I saw that you were a kind-hearted soul. So I said, I'll tell you, I don't want to go through with this baby. I want to abort the baby. I want to get rid of the baby. I don't want this baby to be. And you called over your husband and you both came and you sat down and you talked with me. You talked with me for a while. And you sat there and you talked to me and you gave me encouragement and you told me, don't get rid of the baby, make sure the baby lives, you want this baby to live. And you told me this and that and the other. You told me all these things over and over. And you told me, and I was convinced. Your advice, your good word, convinced me I'm going to keep the baby. She turned to this lady and she said, that baby was the soldier that saved your son. The baby that you caused to be into this world with your words, with your advice, that's the one that just saved your son. It's an amazing story. Absolutely amazing story. We have no idea the advice, the eitzah that you give is so far-reaching, so far-ranging. Look at what it can do. Look at how many great things it can cause. That's the concept that we learn over here. It's just such a lesson of how the power of how these things can help people out. That's the concept, he says, where he says over, you know, giving good advice and how it goes through. So basically what we did today is we went through the reason why the Torah goes through all these psukim over and over. That's at Seder L'Derech. We explained the word Hikriv in five different ways. We explained, number one, why he went first. Hashem wanted him to go first, therefore he went first. Then we said that he gave good advice to all of the Shvatim. That was our second idea. The third one is, he wasn't just bringing a korban, he had kavanos in mind. The fourth one is, he was the wealthiest of all the Shvatim, and therefore he paid a little bit more, he gave a little bit more than everybody else. And the fifth answer that we gave altogether was based on this idea of, he was a Nasi, and someone, I don't want to say greater than everybody else, but he had his own greatness that was a little bit different. And then we mentioned the stories that go with greatness as well as giving good advice. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.